Welcome to our new podcast series called In the Mix. I am Wynn Darden. I'm the business manager for the Lumiflon FEVE fluoropolymer resins. The podcasts are all about choosing the right coating solutions, where we discuss with industry experts what influences their decision-making processes when it comes to specifying and using coatings. We'll delve into how experts develop their strategic planning approach to current structural and future market demands. In today's episode, we'll be talking with Jennifer Gleisberg of Tenemic about the key role that performance plays in coating technology. Jennifer is the Senior Manager for Performance Coatings at Tenemic, and she will detail what processes her company goes through, with emphasis on research, testing, durability, and life cycle analysis when they're developing and using their coatings. Jennifer, thank you for coming in, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and Tenemic, if you would.
Yeah, thanks for having me today, Wynn. So I am, as Wynn said, the senior manager of performance coatings for Tenemic, but I originally started with Tenemic in 2002 in our customer service department and have thus moved over time into our sales department and assisting our agency representatives in the field with day-to-day, you know, activities and assistance with projects and performance testing and a whole wide range of, you know, information that they require to do their job in the field. So
Jennifer, we kind of wanted to talk about, go through the process you guys use. You're manufacturing high performance coatings. How do you start to formulate materials like that? And what role is that? How important is the formulation and its performance over periods of time?
Sure. Well, so coating formulations are, comprised of many different ingredients that could be resins, curing agents, extenders, additives, color pigments. In addition to that, solvents. And each of those ingredients offer a wide range of raw material suppliers who may offer several different options to choose from. So that creates an exponential number of possible formula combinations. And coatings are typically grouped generically by chemistry, whether that's an epoxy, a urethane, a fluoropolymer, but they may be formulated completely different from each other. So that in turn creates a very different application characteristics and performance attributes for that particular coating. So formulating using only the highest quality ingredients allows manufacturers of high performance coatings like Tenemic to ensure that our formulations are able to perform in both accelerated testing environments as well as real world applications in the field. Running performance testing following industry recognized testing standards helps us to qualify each coating's ability to resist things like UV light, abrasion, and other causes of coating degradation.
Okay. And you mentioned now accelerated weathering. What type of, why would you use accelerated weathering? And then what type of testing would you run on a coating that would be considered accelerated testing?
So there's different accelerated testing, but say you're talking about UV exposure, that would be something like ASTM D4141 for Amaqua, and that would show, in an accelerated time period, how that coating is going to perform when subjected to UV degradation.
And that Amaqua test, I think, is quicker than natural weathering, right?
It is, yeah. And I plan to, I think throughout the rest of the podcast, I plan to kind of get into some of that. But yes, it is a little bit quicker. And it also is easily correlated to real world, South Florida exposure as well.
How do you compare coating types and then coatings made by different manufacturers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So subjecting a coating as well as a complete coating system, whether that's, just a primer or a primer, an intermediate, and a top coat, to extensive testing can help to provide that true, you know, performance profile of a product. So running that extensive testing using a wide variety of test methods showcases a product's strong and weak attributes, as no coding is superior in, of course, all of those areas. That could be high UV exposure, as I mentioned, the ASTM D4141 for Imaqua, or corrosive conditions with ASTM D5894 for salt spray fog, or ASTM G85 with cyclic salt fog prohesion. This testing can provide the needed criteria to base educated selection and provide specific performance metrics to include in a specification when you're looking for performance to be added. In theory, that means that careful analysis of comprehensive product performance data, you know, as I mentioned, taken from a multitude of different tests, is the best way to determine the true differences in coatings from one manufacturer to the next.
And there are several, well, quite a number of choices you have in that area. There's UV light, called QUVA, QUVB, you mentioned Imaqua, there's Xenon Arc. There's a whole series of these tests that people run through. Now, when you do the accelerated testing, obviously you can't simulate the real world 100% in an accelerated test. Do you combine that information with the data that you have from, say, exposures in South Florida, which would be considered real time?
We do. We combine that. So yes, we're not only using the accelerated data, we're using real world, you know, performance data as well to combine those together to understand the performance of the coating, and not just using one or the other to determine that.
And you guys have, my understanding is you guys have more than, some of your coatings are more than 20 or 25 years of real-time exposure.
That's right. And I'll talk throughout the, you know, other portions of the podcast about case histories and how that is also important, you know, not just using your real life and accelerated testing, but also applying the case histories to that to determine the real true life cycle of the coating system and how long it's going to perform.
And why would you use then accelerated testing? I know what reason for that?
Sure. But as we know, coating technology is very dynamic and initial results are required quickly. So accelerated laboratory testing is intended to put extra stress on a coating and cause premature degradation. The usefulness of that accelerated testing is that it's standardized with controlled perimeters, which allows for that comparison between products when you're determining, you know, which product is going to be the best for a particular project. And it also helps to compare manufacturers and the valuable performance attributes of a particular product. So accelerated testing can be correlated to real-world performance, as I mentioned, if the data is available. And we talked about the Imaqua ASTM D4141, which is that equatorial mount for mirrors for acceleration with water. And it is the most widely used outdoor accelerated weathering test. And it's reported in megajoules per meter squared. And that test protocol is designed to emulate extended sunlight exposure. Those results can be compared with years of average South Florida radiation. So that's when you were talking about the real world performance. And to put it into the listener's perspective, 3 to 4 months of Imaqua testing, or 280 to 300 megajoules per meter squared, equates to roughly around 1 year of South Florida radiation. So I think putting it in that context helps one understand, you know, how those accelerated tests can correlate to real world exposure testing as well.
So you guys must work pretty hard then on trying to correlate these accelerated tests.
Absolutely, yeah, because you know, in the real world, if it if you want 5 years of case histories, you that coding's got to be around and be tested for 5 years or 20 years, you know, the same thing, however you're looking at it. So it takes quite a while to get that real life, real world performance data. And the accelerated testing helps us as a manufacturer understand how our coatings are going to perform in a shorter period of time.
Is that standardized type testing? Is that all you need to prove the quality and long-term performance of a particular coating or coating system?
I mean, the standardized testing definitely helps. But product selection should not only be based on testing, but rather that combination of testing, both accelerated and real world, as well as case histories. So asset preservation really starts with selecting the right coating system. So you want, you know, when you're looking at any type of project, you know, and the owner says they want 25 to 30 years of performance, you know, we have to look at it as a manufacturer and determine what products are going to work in that application, just like a specifier would when they're, you know, writing a specification. So there's lots of influential properties that can affect how long a coating lasts. That could be formulation, that could be structural design, could be environmental conditions, application procedures, and et cetera. So the coating system used to protect an asset should be selected on the basis of the asset's environment. So you know, you don't want to recommend a coating or choose a coating that's not going to be applicable for the environment that you're trying to protect. With the product's particular performance strengths matching that asset's environment. And as I mentioned, whether those are, you know, pressures with UV light, whether that's a coastal environment, where the coating could degrade, you know, at a quicker rate than in a different environment, the coating chosen should be designed to stand up to them. And it should also be verified that the coating's anticipated lifespan. And what I mean by lifespan is, yeah, how long that coating's going to last or how long you need that coating to last fits with the long-term asset management timeline, as well as the life cycle cost. So are you looking at a coating that may be more expensive in the beginning when you're, you know, pricing out the project, but it could last twice as long and in theory be less expensive over the lifetime of that of the lifetime of that coating and that project?
So how would you monitor the life cycle cost? Talk a little bit about that. How do you guys do that? And I'm assuming that's based both on accelerated testing and on real-time data when you present that to an architect or an engineer or a asset owner.
Yeah, of course, the performance data comes into play there, as well as just understanding, how long that coating is going to do its job over that period of time. Say that's 20 years, and you're looking at the cost over that 20 years of having to do maintenance, you know, to keep that coating up? Or are you going to choose a product in the beginning that, you know, costs less, but has to be applied or had maintenance on it every 5 years? So in theory, that, of course, would cost more because you're having to do, you know, application and surface prep and all these things that are part of that life cycle cost, when you could choose a coating that may be a little more expensive in the beginning, but last you that 20-year period where you don't have maintenance. We're very, a big market for us is water tanks. And so water tanks is something where you wouldn't want to have to recoat that every 5 to 10 years. You know, you want something that's going to last 25 to 30 years and give you that protection.
You mentioned things like surface preparation, coating costs go into that. What are there any other factors that you might consider in that life cycle cost analysis?
Yeah, there's labor, there's equipment, there's supplies, there's environmental related impacts and costs, there's asset downtime, Of course, you've got the material and, you know, your surface prep, as I mentioned already, too. So those are all things, in addition to equipment, those are all things that are going to affect that life cycle cost of a coating, whether that be, you know, like I said, a coating that's going to last 5 to 7 years, or a coating that's going to last 10 to 12 years. Or if you're looking at terms of a fluoropolymer, you're wanting that 20 to 30 year color and gloss protection.
You guys would then be able to compare what units would you come down to, basically? Would that be something like dollars per square foot, or is coating costs plus all these other costs, right?
Yes, that's correct. It's cost per gallon. Yeah, cost per square foot per gallon is really what that that narrows down to. And as a coating manufacturer, you know, our coating representatives are able to help, you know, walk somebody through that life cycle cost and determine, you know, here you're looking at two coatings side by side, and you're able to determine the value with life cycle cost of each of those coating systems, and which one would be of the better option based on that.
So you guys have models that you can show to your customer?
Yep, absolutely.
We view the upfront cost of the fluoropolymer is a lot higher than some of the other coatings, but you're usually using it on a structure like a water tank. You're doing a three coat system, right?
Yep.
And so that cost for the top coat, once you start looking at all three coats, because competitive systems, they have to use the same two coats that you're using, right?
Correct. Yep. Absolutely. Yes. So that's what those, I think back to, we just presented a paper at AMP in March on that particular thing about the life cycle, you know, cost. And there's a spreadsheet that'll kind of walk you through on a water tank, looking at a fluoropolymer system in that regard too, just to kind of understand all those, you know, values that are included in that life cycle cost and that, because understanding life cycle cost is, you'd think it was an easy thing, but it's not. It's something that a lot of people can't wrap their head around, and it takes time to understand and walk through that process with owners and, you know, engineers to determine which option would be best for a project.
I know this is probably a range of answers here, but what type of a overall cost advantage for, say, a conventional versus, say, a conventional polyurethane would a fluoropolymer have? At the end of the day, you would spit out a dollars per square foot per gallon or whatever that unit is that you're looking at. What type of advantage would the fluoropolymers typically have? I know that varies.
So let's look at it this way. the independent of an asset, only dependent on a coating's lifespan, you take a polyurethane at 6.5 mils with a predicted lifespan of 19 years, and you have a cost per square foot per year of $1.21 versus a fluoropolymer at 6.5 mils with a zinc rich primer underneath at a predicted lifespan of 30 years. And the cost per square foot per year is only 80 cents. So you take from 80 cents to $1.21, and you can do the math easily, you know? So looking at that, over, like I said, when you're looking at that life cycle cost of just the top coat, you really get that, you know, sense of understanding as to the savings that you're getting over the lifespan of that coating.
How about your case studies now? As we mentioned earlier, that you guys have had assets that have been out there for more than 20 years. What value do those case studies provide in assessing the performance of the coating then?
So accelerated and real world testing are important, as I mentioned, to show the overall performance of a coating and or a coating system. But in addition to the testing, real world case histories should be utilized to document that actual life cycle of a coding or a system in a similar project environment. Those visual observations are easy to evaluate. So say you're looking at a water tank, and you can see, you know, degradation over time on a water tank pretty easily. But what about an application on the interior of a structure or in immersion or even inaccessible areas? Those are a lot harder to evaluate. So for added provability, case histories should be inspected and written by a third party. So say after I look at the way Tanemic does things, a water tank that's going on 20 to 25 years, we're looking at trying to get a third party, you know, inspected and written third party case studies of the exterior and interior of those tanks to show actual provability that our systems are lasting over that period of time. Not just what Tanemic is saying, but what we see from a third party, you know, as well.
So would they go to a project site or an asset site, and would they look at, can they measure properties after that long? And
yeah, yes, they can. And so it would be with the help of our codings representative in that particular project area that would work with the third party inspector and get that going, you know, as far as writing the report and getting that inspection to really show that. And as you mentioned earlier, we have codings that have been around that long, and we are able to now get that third party inspecting and written reports to show that true performance of our products.
Okay. What would they be looking for?
They look for, of course, a lot of the testing, if there's failures, if there's, you know, things of that nature, where a lot of the reports would say that, you know, it was assessed and with proper maintenance, you know, this coding system could last many more years.
Well, that's fine. I just wanted to get an idea. I mean, we have in our company, of course, we did a lot of work on bridges in Japan. And one of the things they would do is they would paint half a bridge with, a current coating like a polyurethane, and the other half they paint with the fluoropolymer. And then they let them sit. Some of these bridges have been out there for 30 or 35 years. And one of the things that they're, in some cases, are able to do is to monitor gloss retention and color change. So they take the initial readings and then they go back every several years and they'll read it again. Of course, they clean the surface. I think they get accumulation of dirt on it and everything that affects those measures. But they're actually able to deliver, here's what the color change has been over the period of time that the bridge has been in service. And the fluoropolymers offer really remarkable performance, with 70 or 80% gloss retention after 30 some odd years, 32, 33 years. So, and there really aren't many products that can do that other than the fluoropolymers, in our opinion.
And that's really, that's exactly correct. And those are really what we are getting, that data on right now is the fluoropolymers. Really it's on the tank side. Not to say that we couldn't do that on the architectural side or, whatnot as well, but that's really where we are seeing those tanks really performing well after that amount of time, and said, well, let's get a third party written, tester report and see really how these are holding up over time. So we're giving, first priority to those 15 to 20 year or plus year tanks that have been coated with fluoropolymer.
You mentioned architectural coatings. Could you talk a little bit about that side of the business? I know a lot of your business is water tanks, but I think you guys have been doing more and more architectural over the years as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned bridges, and we actually have a couple of bridges going on right now that are utilizing fluoropolymer. So those are very exciting for us because that's a market that we haven't, we've dabbled in, but haven't gotten, you know, we're trying to get our feet more wet in that department. So per se. But yeah, as far as the architectural as well, you know, that's stadium applications, that's exterior, you know, metal buildings, canopies, airport, you know, architecturally exposed structural steel, all of those things can utilize systems, you know, with polyurethanes or fluoropolymers, depending on, you know, the requirements of the project and how long they want those assets to last.
And those would typically be like the water tanks. Those would typically be repainting projects then?
Not always. No, we probably do just as many new projects, you know, new builds as we do repaints. I don't know on a percentage, but I would say it's pretty even as to that. But looking at things, you know, of course there's always the overcoat application. But there are considerations when diving into that, you know, process as well as to doing a test patch and understanding how the coating system is going to last over in a, you know, an existing substrate and coating system that was previously there as well. So with the emphasis on performance, coatings that provide, you know, long life cycles and limited maintenance are considered true high performance. In the end, an asset protection is what matters most to an owner. And that's why, you know, we believe that formulation matters, testing matters, and above all else, performance matters.
And I think one of the keys for what you guys do is that you provide that performance at the lowest life cycle cost.
That's right. That is exactly right. That's really what differentiates us, I feel, is that we can provide that. And we know that we're basing that off of, you know, that standardized testing that we really feel is important to understand the value and performance of a product, no matter what that product is. If it's a primer, it's an intermediate, if it's a top coat, they all matter, you know, in regards to performance. And that if you're looking at coatings to be used on a project, you want to make sure that you're using not only that accelerated testing, not only that real world testing, but understanding in even real life case history, you know, world that the coating's going to stand up to the environment that you're trying to put it into.
Very good. Thank you, Jennifer. We thank you for participating in the podcast.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, In the Mix. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to hear more, be sure to subscribe. To catch all the latest from Lumiflon, you can visit our website at lumiflonusa.com or follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Lumiflon USA. Thanks again. See you next time.